My mum used to have to hide Twizzlers in the house because she knew it was my favourite candy and I would eat the entire package. Crazy to think, I am now partnered with Twizzlers Canada. Hashtag partner.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily fantasy basketball podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com, and you can find me on Twitter as always at redrock_bball. The NBA is back. We're here to look at the first six games back after the All-Star break, all from Thursday. Some interesting stuff happening with rotations across the league. Then, of course, previewing the nine games for Friday for DFS. Michael Bolton, he's ready.
Let's get to it.
Let's get to it indeed. We will start where we always do in these shows. Of course,
monstrous line of the night.
And the monstrous line of the night goes to Steph Curry of the Golden State Warriors. It was between him and his teammate Kevin Durant. Curry gets the nod here. 36 points, including 10 triples, 6 rebounds, 7 assists, and 2 steals. Curry was 12 of 23 from the field for 52% and hit both of his free throws. An excellent 63% from three-point range as well. Curry is the fourth-ranked player on a per-game basis this season, hitting over 5 threes per game, which, of course, is on par with that excellent 15-16 season. He had exactly the same 5.1 triples per game. He's seen his assists decrease quite a bit this season, and the steal rate has dropped. Otherwise, a lot of the other numbers are fairly close to what they've been in the past for Steph, averaging shooting 49% from the field and 92% from the free throw line. He's going to be this solid top 10-ish, top 6 type of guy for the rest of the way. We do always worry about the Warriors resting guys. I feel like that's an overblown thing that does happen, and I'm not all that concerned about it. Again, the Western Conference is pretty tight. The Warriors are strong, of course, but I think that's a little bit of an overblown concern with Steph. Just hopefully he doesn't happen to get himself injured, but he is your monstrous line of the night for the first game back after the All-Star break. The next one,
waiver wire line of the night.
The waiver wire line of the night is Chetty Osman of the Cleveland Cavaliers. Osman played 34 minutes and had a pretty nice line, 19 points, including 5 triples. He had 5 rebounds and 5 assists as well. No steals or blocks, but shot the ball well, 7 of 12, and that was something that really dragged him down at the beginning of the season, Chetty. But he was strong before the All-Star break. Had that ankle injury to miss the last 4 games before the break, but prior to that, 29 points with 6 triples and 8 rebounds, 29-4-4, 17-8-2 with 2 steals, and 26-5-7, and then hurt his ankle. And played that first game back the first game before the break, he did play on limited minutes, 13 points in 25, and then came out strong here. He has shot 50% or better in 6 of his past 7 games, a far cry from where he was to begin this season. He is absolutely fine as a 12-team league guy. He's a top 60 player over the last month. Yes, Kevin Love is back, but that just means Chetty gets more minutes at the 3, because he is a guy that you would hope that this team would look to build on, shooting some pretty strong numbers, 49% from the field over his last 21 games. He is someone to look at in 12-team leagues. I wouldn't say that he is a 100% must-hold or must-roster guys, because at this point in the season, we're looking at who's helping us, game value, who can we stream in. If a guy is not in your best 10 or 11 players, which Chetty probably isn't if you're grabbing him off the wire, he's not a must-hold guy, although, again, these last month numbers are pretty strong. But if that field goal percentage drops off and he's not hitting threes at 49%, which he's done over those last 7 games, then his value does dip pretty quickly. And there maybe takes him to be not a must-roster guy. But for now, he's a guy to have a look at. You can use him at times without being a player that we think of as a must-roster player necessarily. The deep league player of the night is his teammate, Matty Dellavedova. Dally has been relatively strong since coming across from the Bucks for deeper leagues, but is still just rostered in 1% of Yahoo leagues. 20 minutes here for Dellavedova, 2 points, but 4 rebounds, 11 assists, 2 steals and a block. It helps that the guy ahead of him is the worst point guard in the NBA, Colin Sexton. And we've seen Larry Drew get frustrated a lot of times with Sexton. To be fair to Sexton, he was improving before the break, but he was an absolute disaster in this game here. And Dellavedova has been putting up numbers, which have made him, I guess, at least a guy that's worthy of being rostered in more than 1% of leagues, especially over his last 11 games, giving us over 5 assists per game. Regardless of the other numbers, getting 5 assists per game in any sort of deep format, 16, 18 team leagues, that has value because you just can't find that number of assists off the wire in general. And Dellavedova looks like he's got a relatively solid value in terms of, you know, being able to play every night and get 20 minutes every night. In fact, his last 5 games today was the fewest amount of minutes he's seen, and he still saw over 20 minutes. And the field goal percentage is an issue. He's combined for 5 points in his last 60 minutes of action, but he's also had 24 assists and 3 steals and 2 blocks in that time. So some real value in those areas from Matty Dellavedova. Let's move on to the next one now.
Young gun of the night.
The young gun of the night is De'Aaron Fox of the Sacramento Kings. Foxy was really good here against the Golden State Warriors. 32 minutes for Fox, 18, 3, and 8 with 3 steals and a block. He was 6 of 14 from the field. The free throw is not that strong. 4 of 6 from the line, but Fox, who started to decline a bit, and in fact, over the last month, he's barely inside the top 90. Of course, that doesn't mean that he's a droppable guy, but had started to fade away as some of his long twos hadn't gone in at the same rate they'd gone in earlier in the season, and we saw the steal rate drop off from him as well, and he wasn't hitting threes at anywhere near that level that he was to begin the season. But nice to see him back on track somewhat in this game. But I think we need to recalibrate some of our expectations. There was this point in the start of the season where he was a top 20, top 25 player. He's more of a top 50, top 60 sort of a guy, I think, with some of his downfalls, especially in those field goal percentage numbers. And when the steals drop off, which they have over that last 10 games or so, it has had an impact on his overall value. But De'Aaron Fox is your young gun of the night for Thursday. I tell a man's not hot. Your dud of the night is Eric Bledsoe. That is 2 duds of the night in a row for Bledsoe. 2 absolute disasters of games. 32 minutes here for Bledsoe. 5 points on 2 of 9 shooting. 3 rebounds and an assist. And the ever illustrious triple zero. No threes, no steals, and no blocks. That means in his last 2 games, he has combined for 9 points, 5 rebounds, and 2 assists with no steals, no threes, no blocks. And he has also shot 3 of 13 during that time and 3 of 6 from the line. Just absolute disaster numbers. But Bledsoe is the Nick Batum of seasons past. He puts, you know, 2 bad games up, which there is absolutely no denying these are disaster games. These are really, really bad. But people are out on him. Oh, shit, get rid of him, gotta go. He is still a top 50 guy this season, the 44th ranked player, in fact, over the course of the season. And prior to these 2 games, if you have a look at what he did prior to that, 25 and 7, 2 steals, 14, 8 and 6, 4 steals, 15, 3 and 5, 5 steals, 22, 6 and 11, 2 steals, 18, 3 and 5, 4 triples, 19, 11 and 5, 2 threes, 19, 1 and 2, 2 steals and 3 threes. That's fantastic. They are absolutely monster numbers. And then he shits the bed twice and people are off, oh, screw this bloke, he's trash, what garbage. And it's true, they're garbage games. He's not a garbage player. See who's got Bledsoe. Go for a real buy low here because people do tend to overreact to some of Bledsoe's performances. And you can, you know, potentially get him at somewhat of a discount now because of these 2 games, which are freshly seared into people's minds who do have him on their roster. So that's important to be able to take advantage when those scenarios arise. And I think this is that opportunity because people will look at this. They had, you know, he had a stretch at the start of the season where he was like a 41% shooter and was getting half a steal a game and his value was right down. But when those numbers come back up, which they have for prolonged periods of time this season, then he's just back to being what he is, even in the 29 minutes, which is down from, say, the 32 or 33 that we would hoped he would get this season. Really strong stuff from Bledsoe in that little period and terrible performances of late. But that is where you should be looking to see if you can strike on a buy low and hopefully get him at a pretty decent level because those numbers will bounce back, I'm pretty confident. The plus-minus goats of the day, Ken Fareed, moved to the bench with Clint Capela back. He played a little bit of power forward, but overall, the minutes weren't great, but still a +96, so maybe that gives D'Antoni something to think about in terms of trying to play him and Capela together a little bit more. I still don't see it, and especially with the Rockets signing Matt Smith's favorite, Terrence Jones, maybe they look for Jones to play those backup power forward minutes, which does really cripple Fareed's overall value. Now, strong plus-minus, I still think Fareed is a pretty clear drop in all 12-team leagues, despite that, you know, I guess glimpse of, oh, maybe they'll play him together. I didn't think they'd even try and play him together at all. They barely did in today's game, and Capella wasn't able to be a 12-team league guy. The worst net rating went to Seth Curry of the Portland Trailblazers, a negative 100.9. Maybe there'll be times when he loses minutes in the rotation to guys like Zach Collins, who was completely out with Enes Kanter around, although that would mean the Blazers would have to go pretty big, and that's not going to happen all that often, I would believe. Let's look at some news across the league. James Johnson hurt his shoulder in today's game, was not able to return. That really helped Kelly Olynyk get a big lineup, and it also enabled Derek Jones Jr. to return to the rotation. Now, Jones was available to play, but until Johnson hurt himself sometime in the second quarter, Jones was out of the rotation, and then he jumped back in. Jim Johnson is out for a period of time, then Derek Jones Jr. in those deeper leagues will want to be of use there. But otherwise, it looked like he was going to be on the outside looking in, although I still think pretty clearly he should be playing over Scooter Magruder. Maybe Spoelstra was just being a little bit cautious. And then it gets further complicated when Goran Dragic returns, as who the hell is going to get these minutes in Miami? But a Johnson injury could open things up for Jones and for Olynyk. The big news, of course, that people want to hear about is the talk from interim GM, or whatever his title is in New Orleans, Danny Ferry, about Anthony Davis and Jrue Holiday, that they tried to re-engage the NBA. This is something I talked about before the All-Star break, that the Pelicans were definitely going to try and see if they could sit Davis the rest of the way. They hated the way that it's played out, and they were going to see if they could do it. The NBA, surprising to me, I thought the NBA would soften its stance, and they would say, no, okay, well, now you can sit him, the All-Star break's over. But they didn't. So the Pelicans said, well, we will continue to play him. We'll abide by your wishes. But they're going to reduce his minutes. And it's likely going to be between 20 and 25 minutes a game for Anthony Davis. And that's going to have a real cramp on his value. Now, Davis is that bloody good that he's still probably going to be a top 50 player in those limited minutes. There'll be nights where he plays 20, nights where he plays 25. He'll probably sit out some back-to-backs as well. I think if you're looking to trade him, you don't want to trade him for like a top 100 guy or a top 80 guy. If you can get a top 50 or top 60 guy back, that's probably the move to make. But that's where we're sitting with him. The other news that came out is that Jrue Holiday is also going to have his minutes reduced. And they reported that he'd be looking at around 30 minutes a night. I think it might actually come back to a bit under that, 28 minutes a night. So there's a lot of minutes to go around there. But I just feel that the Pelicans' rotation is going to be a mess. You're going to have Frank Jackson get a boost. They want to see more from their upcoming free agents, Julius Randle, Jahlil Okafor, Alfred Payton as well, plus the young guys, Cheick Diallo, Frank Jackson, and Kenrick Williams. So you're going to see minutes from those guys. Now, Williams is a 12-team league guy. You can look at Okafor as a 12-team league guy, and probably Lord Alfred Payton, if he ever comes back, although he is scheduled to return on Friday with his ankle injury. But those other guys, like Diallo, I really like what Diallo does, but does him playing more minutes, is that because he probably wouldn't have been in the rotation? Is that 16 minutes a night? Well, that's just for deeper leagues. Frank Jackson, is he a 21-minute a night guy? Are they going to reduce Etuan Moore, who's already not going to play back-to-backs? Are they going to take him out of the rotation? Where's Darius Miller fit in there? I think Ian Clark is kaput. It's just going to be a complete mess here. Yeah, for all of these Pelicans guys, the guy I think who's going to have the most consistent minutes is going to be probably Kenrick Williams, who'll play 33 to 34 minutes a night with the news of guys like Miller and Moore and Holiday and Davis and all these guys, I believe, getting reduced while players like Randle and Payton and Okafor and Diallo and Jackson see their minutes bump back up. I think Jrue drops down to perhaps not being a top 50 guy the rest of the way. He's been the 17th ranked player so far. I've probably been a little bit aggressive in terms of reducing his minutes. I think probably 27 a night is what he could go for. If he plays 30 a night, then he probably still stays as a top 50 guy, but I think he's going to be in that 35 to 60 zone, which it seems broad, but we all know that there's slight variations, 1 or 2 minutes less from a player can drop them 20 or 30 spots pretty comfortably. So there is some obvious concern if you have those guys. In the Holiday one, we thought that he wouldn't play 36 a night. I thought he might go to 33 or 34. Now I'm even more cautious of where he's going to end up with that playing time and how many minutes he actually gets. And they're going to try and see. Hopefully that doesn't mean they give big minutes to Tim Frazier, because I can guarantee you he's not a part of anyone's future. See what Frank Jackson can do and see what Diallo and these other youngish type players that they've got are able to achieve. So some real, at least some news from the Pelicans. And some real handicapping of the value of guys like Davis and Holiday, who obviously are first and second round players respectively, and they're going to lose 2 to 3 rounds of value, I would guess, based on the information we got today. But it does appear that Davis will play, but you could imagine that any sort of injury. And the report, Davis, the last game before the All-Star break, they ruled him out and they sent him for an MRI and he left the game early. And there's all sort of rumors or talk. Oh, what's he doing? Was he? Well, the Pelicans sent him for that MRI because they're looking for any excuse they can to not play him the rest of the season. That's what I believe. But they sent him for that MRI. He didn't leave on purpose. They said, get out of here, go get an MRI. And they're probably going, man, please tell us it's something that's going to rule him out for 2 months. I think that's what they wanted. Obviously, it came back clean and he's going to play. But they're going to take any opportunity they can, I believe, to try and not play him while, softly abiding by the NBA's rules. It's going to be a shit show. It's going to be a mess. It's already a mess. And it doesn't look to me as though it's necessarily going to get any better there in New Orleans. Let's go on now to look at the six games across the league and talk about what happened in these games back from the All-Star break. The first game we take a look at is those Miami Heat. They took on the Philadelphia 76ers. The Sixers won 106-102 without Joel Embiid. It was a slow start for Dion Waiters for the Heat, but he came through strongly, 18 points in 30 minutes with 3 steals. The 3 steals is really the key there. What Waiters is able to do when the iron shoulder Goran Dragic returns is still up for debate, but for points leagues, he's a strong enough add, I think, in 12-teamers and more of a 14-team category guy. Justice Winslow, 11-7-5 with 3 steals in 29 minutes. But since Dragic was injured, he is not a top 100 player. And when Dragic returns, which is probably next game, I'm just not really sure where Winslow fits in here. And in a 10-team format, I think he's pretty clearly droppable. Olynyk, I mentioned earlier, 15-6-3 in 29 minutes with Johnson out, while Richardson struggled 13-2-5. 31 minutes for Dwayne Wade is a lot. It's too much. But 19-4-6 was enough. He has been a fringe 12-team league guy for stretches this season, while Whiteside was trash. 4-5 with 2 blocks in 21 minutes. But that didn't mean that Adebayo benefited. He played only 17 minutes and had 6 points in that time. Whiteside still a hold. Adebayo's not a 12-team league guy, but there's a lot of disaster potential in those rotations. For the Sixers, Embiid was out, so Boban Marjanovic started and played a lot. 27 minutes is a lot of Boban. 19-12 with a block. He was 7-10 from the lines. That's a lot of free throw attempts. 6-7 from the field. He also had the highest usage on the team outside of Ben Simmons, which is probably not the ideal situation to have Boban getting those many touches. And I'm not sure he can take 27 minutes every night. And I've got so many questions about Boban. Do I drop Jahlil Okafor for Boban? Now, over the next 3 games that Embiid is likely to be out, yes, Marjanovic is going to be good. But after that, he goes back and plays 14 minutes a night and his value is done. So are you looking to win a February 20th to 28th matchup? Or are you looking to win through March? Now, I'm not saying that Okafor is going to be this excellent option. I don't know that they're going to give him 30 minutes per night. In fact, I would highly doubt that they do. But they could give him 27 minutes a night. So 27 minutes a night from Okafor through all of March, is that better than getting 3 good games out of Boban? That's where you've written out. I got that question multiple times. Drop Okafor for Boban because I've got Embiid. I'm not really worried about Embiid long term here and missing the rest of the season. Of course, if that was to happen, which is, again, not on the cards at all, then Boban's the value play. But at this point, it looks like they're just sitting him down. They're just resting him. They're managing his load. And Boban is putting up value for these couple of games. And even then, he might not play 27 minutes next game. We'll see. But it is worth mentioning or worth thinking about, hey, am I chasing short-term value when I don't need it? You might need it. You might need to get into the playoffs and Boban gives you that. But if you've got a 5% chance of Boban being a top 100 guy in March versus a 50% chance of Okafor doing it, I know which direction that I would like to land there. Jim Butler, 18-6-6 in 35 minutes, and Toby Harris, 23-11 with 3 triples. Now, Harris took 15 field goal attempts here with Embiid out, and I did write this over on Basketball Monster saying about how Harris may be able to see a little bit of a boost back to some of his Clippers numbers. And while it may appear that as a member of the Philadelphia 76ers, he's averaging 13.8 field goal attempts per game in the 5 games. And for the Clippers, he was at 15.5. Now, that doesn't seem like a big difference. It's 1.7 field goal attempts per game. But that is 10% of his overall field goal attempts. And if we don't include today where he shot 15 times, he was at 13.5. That's an additional 2 field goal attempts per game. And when you're talking 2 field goal attempts per game, that can make a difference. That might be as a 50% shooter, that's 2 points per game. And again, 2 points per game doesn't seem like much, but 18 to 16 points a game, 20 to 18, is enough to drop you 10, 15 spots in the rankings. And I think that we'll see Harris push to that 15, 15 and a half while Embiid is out, and then maybe go back to 13 and a half or 13.6 or 13.7 or whatever it is when Embiid is back. And it seems marginal, but anytime you have a 10% decrease in a number, I think it's relevant to at least note. TJ McConnell, minutes are well down, but he was really impactful. 3 steals and 5 assists. He can be like a Marcus Smart light type of a guy. While Simmons, 21-7-4 is good, counting stats for Benny, not Johnny. But the free throws really bothered you, but of course you're well aware of that. If you do have Ben Simmons on your team, Jonah Bolden re-entered the rotation but didn't do really anything. I thought he'd be a little bit more productive, but alas, he was not. The Phoenix Suns and the Cleveland Cavaliers, the Suns made a change to their starting lineup. They still got spanked by the shitful Cleveland Cavaliers. They lost by 13 points, 111-98. Kelly Oubre joined the starting lineup, replacing McCall Bridges, which I think is a questionable decision. Now, out of all of the regular rotation players on the Suns, McCall Bridges has the best on-off rating of this team entirely. He's like a plus 5 point something. I think the next highest is a plus 3.7, so significantly higher. They took him out. He was the 10th man in this rotation. Ended up with 24 minutes, but the 10th guy to enter this game, which is questionable, while Josh Jackson played 30 minutes. I definitely would have kept Bridges in over Jackson, but Kokoschkov didn't go that route. So Oubre, 41 minutes, 23-4-1, 3 steals and 2 blocks. Fantastic. He has been much improved in Phoenix, especially in those peripheral numbers, which he has really lacked throughout his NBA career. Booker had 30 points with 7 assists, while Tyler Johnson, just shitful on offense, 5 points with 1 of 7 shooting, but 8 rebounds, 5 assists, 2 steals, 2 blocks, that's value there, and he played 33 minutes. Now, I will never get my head around developing Tyler Johnson, who's not good, and never will be good as a point guard, because he's not a point guard, he's not a starting point guard, he's not a player that you should be developing with these young guys, but I digress. Kokoschkov believes in that. He is more of a 14-team league guy than a 12-teamer. DeAnthony Melton was apparently available for this game. They didn't play him. I still think that's more of the case that he played 35 minutes yesterday as a member of the Northern Arizona Suns. Coming back on a back-to-back off an ankle injury, I would doubt they would play him in that back-to-back. You would hope to God that he would take all of Jamal Crawford's and Ali Okobo's minutes, who combined for 17 minutes in this game, but still not confident that's going to happen. DeAndre Ayton was pretty disappointing, 13-9 in his 35 minutes, but the fact that he played 35 meant that we only got 13 Rashawn Holmes minutes, and that's not enough to be valuable. While Joshie Jackson had 12 points on 16 shots, just disastrous efficiency, 3 steals, and then when TJ Warren comes back, which could be next game, I just don't know where Jackson and Bridges and Oubre fit in here. Does Warren come back and start? Someone's going to lose a shit ton of minutes there. You'd think that those 9 Dragan Bender minutes are gone, but is Bridges going to go to 18 minutes? Is Jackson going to go to 20? I think both of those guys are going to lose quite a bit of playing time. For Cleveland, Larry Nance remained on the bench but was still productive, 14-7-3 with 4 steals. He should still have him in 12-teamers, while Ante Zizic had 15-12, a steal and 2 blocks. Now, Tristan Thompson re-aggravated his foot in practice, and he said he's not going to rush it back, so you would have to imagine at least another week for Tomo here until he's back, so that gives Zizic some expanded value, and in deeper leagues, there's something there for him. While Kevin Love, only the 22 minutes and picked up a lot of fouls, but 16-11 is pretty encouraging for Love in those 22 minutes, and we just hope that he can get back to 30 pretty soon. Jordy Clarkson had 15 points. He had 5 assists, but the efficiency wasn't there, and the minutes were down. While the Padawan Colin Sexton, 8 points on 12 shots is not good. 2 assists and 2 steals. He's really just that points league sort of a guy. While Marquise Chris, only 15 minutes. He is going to be out of the rotation as soon as Thompson is back, in my opinion. The next game, we had the Portland Trail Blazers and the Brooklyn Nets, the debut of Enes Kanter, as the Blazers beat the Nets 113-99. I predicted that Kanter would play about 20 minutes. He played 19 minutes and 48 seconds, so I'm happy with that. And the production's great, 18-9 with a steal. The problem with this is if this is his minute load, which I think is realistic, then he would need to shoot at 89% to have this level of value. I nobody can do that. So instead of 18-9, if we look at him, instead of going 8 of 9, does he go 6 of 9, which is still 67% from the field, or does he go 5 of 9? And that means you're losing 6 points, and then he's a 12-9 with a steal, and is that worth holding? If you grabbed him, you'd probably just want to see where it goes, but realize that how I see it is the 20 minutes should be locked in, the 89% isn't, and that's going to drop back off and drop those numbers back. Lillard had 13, 8, and 8 and didn't shoot well at all, and that's an understatement. He was 5 of 21 from the field. Nurkic had 27 and 12 with 3 blocks, and McCollum 21, 6 and 5. Mo Harkless, 13-8-4, one of his better games, while the Chief Al-Farouq Aminu had 11-10 with three triples. Strong enough from him, but more of a 14-team league guy. Jake Layman, 6 points in his 24 minutes. His 80% shooting, whatever bullshit he was doing over the last couple of weeks, cooled down, but three blocks still there for Layman, and he's an interesting deeper league points streamer. While Zach Collins and Myers Leonard both out of the rotation, and Evan Turner down to 8 minutes. So some interesting changes from Terry Stotts there. For the Nets, we had back to the old Atkinson of old, everyone just spreading minutes all over the place, which could be a real disaster. We had Jared Dudley back healthy. Interestingly, Rowdy Rodions Kurucs was out of the rotation despite them using 11 guys here. Ed Davis played 23 minutes. Jarrett Allen played 23. The blue swimmer Alan Crabb played 29. Shabazz Napier got back into the rotation and played 21. And then you've got Spencer Dinwiddie to try and fit back into all this. And it looks like the Nets, they could be a little bit of a mess as we move forward. Plus, LeVert played only 21 minutes. So there's going to be weird shit that goes on here. Joe Harris had an unbelievable bump in roster percentage on ESPN after winning the three-point shootout. It happens all the time. If you had Harris, that was your perfect sell-high opportunity. 13-4 in 29, while Alan Crabb is an interesting three-point streamer. 17 points with three triples in his 29 minutes. Wasn't a good D'Angelo Russell night, 14 points on 16 shots, but the 8 assists helps there, while LeVert also struggling a little bit with his efficiency. Rondé, he's been so bad this season, 2 points in 15 minutes, while Trevion Graham continues to start. So I think we're going to have a lot more confusion with this Nets rotation as we move forward. The next game that we take a look at, the Boston Celtics and the Milwaukee Bucks. The Bucks win at 98-97. Horford was amazing for Boston. 21-17, 5 assists, 2 steals, and 3 blocks. Tatum had 17-10. And Kyrie, after missing a few games with that knee injury, played 41 minutes, 22 points, 4 triples, 2 steals, and 2 blocks. Unfortunately, his legendary efficiency wasn't there and didn't attempt a single free throw, but those other numbers are strong. Marcus Morris, we're always watching the field goal percentage. That's the indicator for him, because if that's bad, then he's not a 12-team league guy. If that's where it's been all season, then he is. 11 points on 12 shots doesn't cut it. He's a real fringy sort of guy, which I believe, and I think he's got real limited upside, so I wouldn't be afraid in certain circumstances to move on. Jaylen Brown also pretty good here, but on 67% shooting, there's a fairly significant regression coming there. Antetokounmpo had 13-6, a steal, 2 blocks, 58%, and 7 of 10 from the line. So good from him. Middleton 15-13-4, and Brogo had 15-6-4. So strong from their main players, of course, apart from Bledsoe. While Brook Lopez played 34 minutes, he had 2 blocks, he hit 2 threes, he had 10 points and didn't shoot well. The minutes have been trending up for Lopez. DJ Wilson out of the rotation. Ersan Ilyasova has taken his spot. Just the 11 minutes here for Ersan, because we had the debut of Nikola Mirotic, formerly of the Pelicans. 14 minutes for Nick here, 8-3 with 2 triples. That number will jump back up, but that means someone's going to have to lose some playing time. We already saw Sterling Brown down to 9 minutes. Will Ilyasova go down to 7? Will we have George Hill's 21 minutes drop off? Or will Mirotic just be this weird 15-minute a night guy? For now, he's worth holding, but it's something we want to pay attention to. Will he be able to maintain 24 minutes a night? Because if he doesn't, then of course he's not going to be a 12-team league guy. But he was solid enough, and he provides some really strong spacing on this team. The Lakers and the Rockets. The Lakers with a huge comeback here, 111-106. Chris Paul for the Rockets, 23-10-9, and Jim Harden fouled out, 35-6 in 37 minutes. So good numbers from both of those guys. This was the first game that Clint Capela was back. He played 33 minutes and had 12-11, and that meant that we got Kenneth Faried moving to the bench. 18 minutes for Faried, 13-6 with a triple one. Now, those numbers there, they're good enough to be a 12-team league guy. We also saw crossover for a few minutes with Capela. I just don't believe in Faried as an 18-minute-a-night guy being a 12-team must-own player. Again, you don't ever just drop someone for the sake of it, but you have a look. Is there someone else out there on that wire? Is Kenrick Williams available? I would make that switch pretty quickly and getting rid of Faried and jumping off now. Because, look, he played those minutes and we saw the plus-minus was pretty strong from Faried. I just don't believe that he is a guy that's providing 12-team league value in 18 minutes per night. And they just signed Terrence Jones, as I mentioned earlier, which I'm sure I definitely will get the question, is Terrence Jones an ad? No, he likely isn't. He's going to take the backup power forward minutes that Faried doesn't play. And when Shumpert comes back, where are his minutes there? He just isn't going to get enough playing time. He's not a good on-court NBA player. He just isn't up for it unless he's really developed in the G League the last couple of years. He's also 27 years old. For the Lakers, the future MVP, Kyle Kuzma, 18-6-5. Shout out to him for winning the Rising Stars MVP. Thanks to everyone for tweeting that at me as well. Two triples, a steal, and a block while LeBron turned it on. He wasn't great early, but LeBron was great when it mattered.
LeBron James.
29-11-6, a steal and a block. Reggie Bullock, 30 minutes, 14 points and 4 triples. An Allen Crabb type of guy, a 14-teamer, a 3-point streamer in 12s. But most importantly there, he played 30 minutes. Rajon Rondo played 19 minutes. We saw Rondo in the 3 games they've gone with this new starting lineup. Rondo's played under 20 minutes in 2, and then he played a shitload in another one. And that was that game where JaVale got into early foul trouble, and they went basically with no center at all. And that meant Rondo's minutes comes back, jump back up. But, of course, Lonzo Ball has to return. So where the hell is Rondo going to fit in when Lonzo returns? Much like Fareed, if you are looking to open up a streaming spot or add someone off the wire, I think Rondo should be considered expendable. If he can't get 30 minutes a night with Lonzo out, how's he going to do it as we move forward? Ingram had 27-13, playing much better in that point guard role, while JaVale, only the 20 minutes for McGee, but 11-6 with 2 blocks. I would rather the 20 minutes of JaVale than, say, the 18 minutes of Fareed. I would have him as a 12-team preference there. Josh the Hitman Hart, only 19 minutes. Clearly, no one has him in 12s or 14-team leagues at this point, while Kentavious Caldwell-Pope played the 21 minutes. Of course, Rondo could always take those 6 minutes of uselessness that Lance Stephenson provides. The last game of the day, the Golden State Warriors and the Sacramento Kings. The Warriors win 125-123, a new starting lineup for the Kings, which Dave Yeager said he's going to stick with moving forward. Harrison Barnes at the four. We got Hield, Bogdanovic, Fox, Barnes, and Cauley Stein, with Bjelica moving to the bench. In fact, Bjelica moved from starting every game this season to out of the rotation, which is always a confusing decision. So Bjelica has gone from the rotation. I thought that maybe it could be a one-game thing against the Warriors and we'd really see how it pans out next game against the Thunder. But Yeager post-game said, no, this is what we're going to go with moving forward. That really helps Bogdanovich's value. So his 12-team value solidifies. Marvin Bagley was excellent. And so if Bjelica's gone, that's going to help him. 28-14. I just want to see Bagley start over Cauley Stein. That's the lineup I want to see. Bagley's a 12-team league guy as well. Cauley Stein, 10-5 with 3 steals. His defensive numbers have been through the roof the last 4 or 5 games, and that's what's really keeping him afloat as a 12-team league player. While the pencil himself, 13-7 for Barnsley in 33 minutes. He's really a fringe guy, and I would have him prioritized behind, with these King guys, behind Fox, Bogdanovic, Bagley, and Hield. He would be low on that totem pole. Corey Brewer, I think they would look to sign him to a rest of season deal, especially if they're going to run with Barnes at the four. They need a backup three, and that's exactly what Brewer can do. So in deeper leagues, he can be a 3-and-D, steals and threes sort of a guy. Assuming they sign him past the 10-day contract that he's currently on, where Alec Burks played only the 5 minutes in this one, and as I said, Bjelica did not play at all. For the Warriors, Durant had 28-9 with 7 blocks. I think 5 of those blocks came on Marvin Bagley. Boogie, no minutes limit for Cousins anymore, but only 27 minutes. That's going to be the concern as to how they use him. Will Kerr prioritize Cousins over Iguodala? Obviously not in this game. Now, the line here is nice, 17-10, but he's not going to be playing the 34, 35 minutes a night he played for New Orleans. That seems pretty clear. Draymond had 12-6-8. Klay had 18-5-4. And Sean Livingston was out as his partner is giving birth again. That was announced halfway through the game. So fantastic stuff there from the Warriors. And Quinn Cook got those minutes. And with Cousins' minutes going up, we've seen Kevon Looney down to only the 12 minutes of playing time. I don't think anybody would be too surprised at that outcome. All right, that's the wrong button I pushed there. Let's go on and talk some DFS now, of course. And we'll start doing that by looking at the perfect lineups on DraftKings. Steph Curry, Brandon Ingram, Kevin Durant, Al Horford, Marvin Bagley, Chris Paul, Mo Harkless, and Boban Marjanovic for a total of $398.75, and that cost the full $50,000. And on FanDuel, Steph Curry, Chris Paul, Dwayne Wade, CJ McCollum, Mo Harkless, Kevin Durant, the Sticky Bandits, Marvin Bagley and Harry Giles, and Al Horford totaled out at $391.4, and that costs the full $60,000. All right, let's look at DFS now for Friday. We've got an interesting slate of games on all these teams. None of them on back-to-back, so it's all of their first games back from the All-Star break, where things tend to go a little weird. We saw that a little bit in some of today's games as new rotations take place and guys are in and out of the spots where they normally were before. So a bit of adjustment does need to take place when looking at these games. We'll try and do that now and get some of that value out. Here we're going to be looking at DraftKings pricing mainly today. The first game we look at is the Wizards and the Hornets. The Hornets are 5-point favorites. The total 230. Both these teams still trying to push into that playoff mix. The Wizards probably a little bit behind in that, or they're definitely a little bit behind. Tomas Satoranski missed a couple of games before the break for personal issues. He's likely to return here. Charlotte had missed Tony Parker before the break as well, but he is also likely back. So aside from the injury to Dwight Howard, we've pretty much got everyone on deck here for both teams. At point guard, Kemba is at 9,300. I think it's a little bit too high for Walker. He's been solid enough, and he is averaging 50 over the last five, but the couple of games prior to the break, he had cooled off a little bit. I'm not totally in on Kemba. I think with nine games on, you'll be able to find, especially on DraftKings, better priced players to look at. Tony Parker's not doing it. Satoranski at 5,900. I'm not sure the upside is all that high, but prior to him missing those games, he was giving us 32 a night, which at 5,900 is a strong base for cash play. So he's not a tournament guy, but the matchup does favor him, and his minutes were pretty strong. So I do like Tomas there. I think it's fair to say that Chase and Randall won't be taking many of his minutes. 4,600 for Nick Batum as a shooting guard. He's been a lot better recently. That's a strong price for Batum. His numbers haven't quite been to that level, and I don't think he's got much tournament value, but he can be an okay cash sort of floating type of player. While Jeremy Lamb, who'd struggled a little bit, then came on strong at the end of the break, he's up to 6,000. I think that's probably a little bit too high for Jez. Bradley Beal, I like him at 9,200. That's a strong, strong play. He's giving us 50 pretty much every night, so I do like this for Beal quite a bit. Marv Williams at 4,800, that doesn't really do it for me ever. While Trevor Ariza's at 5,900, and he has been putting up strong numbers, a clear 30-point per game guy. And I think, much like Beal, there's really strong floor value in Ariza. Nobody's here to take his minutes away, and the production should be relatively solid. The one that's unknown, I guess, is Jabari Parker at 5,500, who's had some big games and some terrible games as a member of the Wizards. His last game was a 40-pointer in 34 minutes. 5,500 does put an element of risk on him, but I think he's a really good tournament guy, and I would be interested in using him without having him as a must-roster player. For the big men, Cody Zeller, much like a lot of guys in this game, he's a really strong cash player. He's giving us 30 a night. His minutes are up after the hand injury. He's just rock solid at this point in time. While Punchbob Ship, like Bobby Porter, 6,200, probably a little bit more risky, but he's clearly got that higher upside over Zeller. Last game was his worst as a member of the Wizards, just 26, but still some decent value there. Jeff Green at 49. I'm not super into him. He did have a massive game before the break for 38 points in that one. That was that overtime game. Not super interested in him as a great option. And Tom Bryant, we've seen his minutes consistently be under 20, and that's not a recipe for a solid option at all. Over on FanDuel, we're looking at Portis at 67 as well. Batum at 53 with some of that cash value. Beal again, massive at 9,400. Zeller at 6,400 probably is pushing it a little bit too high there for Cody. He's not the most aggressive in terms of putting up big numbers consistently. Let's have a look now at the next game here. Which game is this one? It's the Spurs and the Toronto Raptors. This is, of course, the return of DeMar DeRozan back to Toronto. Kawhi Leonard against his former team as well. The Raptors are 7.5-point favorites. Of course, Danny Green and Jakob Poeltl too. Raptors 7.5-point favorites. The total 228 for this game here. Let's go again. Look at DraftKings pricing for this one. If we look injury-wise, Derek White and LaMarcus Aldridge are both probable. We know White missed a ton of time with that heel issue. He looks like he's ready to go. Kawhi missed games before the break. He's fine to go. He's listening. It as probable, while Pat McCaw also probable, but he is not likely to even be a massive part, if a part at all, in the rotation. The guy that's out, of course, is Fred VanVleet for Toronto. At point guard, Lowry is at 7,200. I love that price. The Spurs have been a pretty strong team for opposition point guards to go up against. Lowry averaging 41 over his last five, some with Kawhi, some without. Really, really strong on Kyle here. Jeremy Lin at 4,500. A decent start to his Raptors career. The return of Kawhi cramps that a little bit because they can mix and match those minutes. But with Van Vliet out, he's going to get a pretty decent chunk of time. I don't love him as a huge option here, though, Linny. While Derek White at 5,300, I think they'll be marginally cautious with him. He has missed quite a bit of time here, about 20 days worth of action. But that's a nice price for White, who's been a 30-point-per-game guy relatively consistently. And if we get word that he's going to play relatively regular minutes, which is a possibility, then he should beat that number. So is it just a name to keep in the back of your head? Bryn Forbesy Forbes and Patty Mills, they will be hurt, more so Mills, by the return of White. Mills had put up some strong numbers, and at 4,100, he was giving us 30-point performances, which is great. But White coming back, I think, does have an impact there. I would much rather have Mills playing over Forbes as a Spurs person, but that's not necessarily how Popovich will view that. At shooting guard, Dan Green's at 41. He's only a tournament guy. Realistically, he's a little bit inconsistent, but he can rack up those, you know, three threes, three blocks, two steals, 15.8 rebound type of games, which is massive at a 4,100 spot. And if you want to buy into revenge stuff, of course, this is against his former team. Of course, the first time he played the Spurs, he had 9 points in 26 minutes. So, hashtag revenge game, Danny Green. DeRozan at 7,300. He went bananas last time against his former team. 62 points in 33 minutes. It's the flip side here. Now, in nearly all cases, you can say, well, it could go both ways. He could come out and have a massive game, or he could be, shaken by the return to Toronto and be distracted by all that stuff, or he could have a middling performance. So really, anything's in play. I think DeRozan had been struggling a little bit before the break, still putting up numbers which was equivalent to a $7,300 price tag, and I like him because that price tag has been suppressed. I'm not expecting 62 points. I'm not banking on he's going to show those Raptors, because again, he did it last time, but there's so many other factors that go into this, and I can't just keep rehashing this idea of revenge games. Ballinelli at 36 with White back, that does impact him negatively. Rudy Gay, 5,400. He has been massive before the break. I like Gay here. I think White inadvertently has some sort of an impact on him because, again, it pushes more of Mills' minutes to the two, DeRozan more to the three, and it does have a marginal impact on usage there as well, but I still think that that is a pretty strong option for Rudy, while Davis Bertans will likely go back to the bench. He'd been a little bit up and down, not really an option that we need to pay too much attention to here. The big man, Pascal Siakam, he's coming off a 67-pointer with Kawhi out. He probably won't get to that level, but at 6,700, I do think in a great matchup for Siakam, who is just getting better and better every game, it appears, or at least more trusted offensively in this team, that's really strong for us. Siakam, Aldridge at 7,600, I think is decent enough. That's a nice price there for him. While the center situation leaves me wanting to at least fade both of those guys in a cash scenario, you got Serge Ibaka and Marc Gasol.
Oh, hi, Mark.
6,300 for Gasol, 6,200 for Ibaka. Again, the whispers that I keep hearing is that Gasol will start eventually, but does that mean 25-23? Does it mean 30-18? Does it mean 30-20 with some minutes shared together? Yeah, how are they going to run that? And I think at those sort of prices, you can only really look at Gasol and Ibaka as tournament guys, and you definitely can't use them together. If I had to guess, I would say Gasol starts in this game, but I'm not confident of that, and I still think we're going to get maybe a 26-22 type of scenario, just unsure of necessarily which way that's going to go, but it's going to be a messy scenario for, it appears, quite a long time with that center rotation in Toronto. On FanDuel, Siakam again at 7,500. He's more bumped up in salary, but I like him. I like the fun guy, Kawhi Leonard at 95. I think he's decent on DraftKings as well, but some better options supersede him. Well, I do like Jeremy Lin out on FanDuel, 4,800. Some nice tournament upside. The matchup suits him. Lowry's okay at 8,000. DeRozan again, 7,900. He had 57 in that first matchup. He's got that upside value and not a bad guy to even look at in cash. And Derek White comes in at 61. I'd be more hesitant to use him on FanDuel at that price in his first game back. Next up, we look at the New Orleans Pelicans and the Indiana Pacers. The Pacers are favored by 5.5, and the total is 220.5. Miles Turner and Tyreke Evans are both questionable for Indiana. Of course, if Turner is out, we load up on Sabonis, and you can even throw your cock into a lineup in a few of those scenarios. For those of you uninitiated, I'm talking, of course, of Kylo Quinn, who can be a real per-minute monster type of a player whose value can go through the roof if Sabonis was to get in foul trouble. With Evans out, it'll be Aaron Holiday likely picking up those minutes, and that's not going to have too much of an impact. For the Pelicans, Darius Miller is doubtful. Now, Anthony Davis and Drew Holiday will play, but as I touched on earlier, they're going to have their minutes limited. I would expect or the understanding is Davis will be under 25 and Drew will be 30 or below in terms of playing time. And they want to give minutes to upcoming free agents and to younger players, Julius Randle, Alfred Payton, Cheick Diallo, Frank Jackson. These are the guys who are likely going to get a boost in their value. Jahlil Okafor, another upcoming free agent as well, who they want to see how this all works. But I think in general, the rotations are going to be a mess. Kenrick Williams, I feel like, is almost going to have the most solid of a rotation role. I think guys like Miller, if he was to play, or Ian Clark, or even an Etuan Moore, I think they're going to have minutes cut off a little bit here as well. And it's going to be just a whole bunch of mess with this Pelicans team for the rest of the season. I do like Daz Collison, though, on the Indiana side. Point guard, 5,700. He's been an absolute rock-solid 30-point-per-game guy since Victor Oladipo got injured. So yeah, there is definite value there in using him as a strong cash guy, even with tournament value there. Also, Corey Joseph, Frank Jackson, Drew at 8,200. I wouldn't want to be using Holiday with this latest news. Alfred Payton, the Lord, he's likely back at 5,000, but I think they're going to limit his minutes, at least in his first game back. He's barely played at all this season with multiple ankle injuries, so a little bit hard to rely on him. Frankie Jackson at 3,500. Again, we'll see some more minutes, but he's a fluky option. He could be an interesting tournament guy if they do rely upon him a bit more. Bojan Bogdanović, I love the matchup for Bojan. I like the price. He is really strong to me at 55. Or Wesley Matthews at 48 doesn't do it for me. Tyreek, Stan Johnson, Etuan Moore, they're all fades. Kenrick Williams at 55, I think that's really, really solid price for cash. Great floor. Tournament upside as well is there, and he can be a tournament build guy. As I said before, I think his minutes is probably going to be the most consistent out of anyone on this team. That's how I'm viewing it now. While Thad Young's at 6,000, I think that's a little bit overpriced there for Thad. The big man Turner's at 6,400 has had a good record against the Pelicans, averaging 38 the last three times. He is questionable. I would definitely look at him as a tournament guy, because if he plays, there could be a 50-pointer here against a team like the Pelicans, who have been giving up good numbers to opposition centers, especially when Okafor is in there. While Sabonis is an excellent tournament option with that real upside to come through and put up numbers if Turner happens to sit. Randall's at 74. He's been putting up some strong numbers. I like him there. Okafor at 55. Again, it's just hard to know how he and Diallo and Randall and Davis are going to all utilize these minutes. So Jahlil at 55 is probably more of a tournament guy. Same with Cheick at his salary of 3,200. But I like that real low salary for Diallo to blow up, because he can be an interesting producer. I'd like to see them give him more opportunities. On FanDuel, Okafor again at 46 has got some value. I like Daza Collison, Bogdanović, Sabonis for the reasons I mentioned earlier. Kenrick at 6,000. I think it's probably pushing a bit too high for him in tournaments, but for cash, I can understand it. And the 78 for Julius Randle also looks pretty good. I think it should go without saying that the 10,000 plus for Anthony Davis, you don't really want anything to do with that whatsoever. Next up, we look at the Bulls and the red-hot Orlando Magic. The Magic are 8-point favorites. Their total here is 217. The Magic are one of the hottest teams in the NBA at the moment, just blowing teams out regularly. Chrissy Dunn missed the last couple of games before the break with a back issue. He should be okay to go here in this one. Timotei Luwawu-Cabarro is questionable with an oblique issue. If he is out, you look for guys like maybe Rolly Hawkins, maybe Antonio Blakeney. Get some of those minutes. Maybe it goes to a Big Shaq Harrison.
Big Shaq!
Let's look at the point guards here. Dunn at 6,100. It looks really impressive. He's been shithouse lately. There's no denying that, but I think he's a really good tournament option at that low salary. While Isaiah Briscoe, him and DJ Augustin have been basically splitting those point guard minutes. He's been putting up okay numbers. Like 24 points at 3,500 is okay. I would not be relying upon Briscoe, but he's at least a name to watch. 7,300 for Zachy Levine. I like what he's been doing, really putting up some strong numbers. You know, solid for cash, good for tournaments. Well, Augustin, Shaq Harrison, Archer Jackano, they're all pretty strong fades in my opinion. You've got Evan Fournier at 5,800, a strong cash play, a great matchup, really 45-point upside here for Fournier, which makes him valuable in all formats of DFS. Well, Terry Ross at 53, a little bit disappointing before the break, old Terry. But at that 5,300 mark, he's got clear tournament value, and I like him in that sort of a scenario. Seldon, Iwundu, Luwawu-Cabarro, they're all no's from me. Big Otto Porter's at 6,200, that is smashable to me. He has been massive, had 57 in the last game before the break. He is really, really showing himself to be a solid player. Well, Johnny Isaac, my man's at 6,100, and I like Isaac, and they're not a good team they're going up against in the Bulls. But is that just taking away all of the value from Isaac? I fear that it might be. Now, I think he can be solid enough as a floor cash guy, but it's not really massively appealing to me just because of that price rise. As Gordon's at 66, I like that quite a bit. I think he's got probably a higher upside than Isaac with how he is used on offense. For the big men, Nikola Vucevic, 9,800. Big men against the Bulls has been a smashable target all season, so you have to like him here. Lauri Markkanen, also red hot. His lowest score in his last five before the break was 41. That's massive. And at 8,100, I like Lowry a bit here, or fair bit. Well, Robin Lopez, man, his numbers have been huge. Now, do they limit what he can do here? They limit his playing time, but they've got no other centers. Are they going to roll Chris Felizio out there for 40 minutes? No. 4,000 for Lopez. He's averaging 28 minutes in the last three, 26 minutes in the last five, and 26 points in those last five. And at 4,000, man, I'll take that every day. You can get that in and it works. And his last game before the break was a 36-pointer in 32 minutes. Robin Lopez, I think, has some value here. I don't think we need to pay too much attention, though, to Kem Birch or Chris Felizio, of course. Over on FanDuel, Porter looks great at 67. I think Gordon and Fournier are pretty strong as well. Vucevic at 10,000 comes in strong. It's very much the same stuff. Now, the 6,500 for Isaac's probably a little bit more valuable on FanDuel than what it is on DraftKings. And Dunn at 6,900.
Giggity!
That takes away a lot of his value there. I still like Levine and Markkanen at their 78 and $8,600 price points. The next game, the Detroit Pistons and the Atlanta Hawks. The Pistons are 3.5-point favorites. The total, 223.5. We're just hoping that the Luki Kennard, the Duck, can get those consistent minutes. It feels like he can. I'm not fully ready to trust Dwayne Casey yet, but it does feel like that is just around the corner. Fan of Pants, Kevin Huerter, is doubtful for this game with an ankle issue. So DeAndre Bembry, Kent Bazemore, Jalen Adams could also see some extra playing time here in this game. Trey Young's at 7,800. He's averaging just the cool 41 over the last five. I like the matchup for Young. I like the opportunity. He's a strong option. Ish Smith is not. Jalen Adams at 3,000 is your tournament sort of a guy. He should be able to absorb the backup point guard minutes. We haven't actually seen him in that role yet since Jeremy Lin was traded because he was dealing with an injury prior to the break. So he's going to be interesting to see whether we can get something out of him. Just a tournament flyer type of a guy. Langston Galloway.
Sometimes it may be good, sometimes it may be shit.
He's always shit. So he's at 3,200, not a guy that I'm keen on. I am keen on Bembry. I am keen on Bazemore. 3,300 for DeAndre. Should be elevated into a larger role with Huerter out. Same for Bazemore at 4,200. Really interested in both of these blokes here. The Duck at 4,000. Luke Kennard, I think that's a strong floor play. Really a lot of value here. While the Duke, Wayne Ellington, is at 3,800. He may start over the Shark, Bruce Brown. He may not, but I feel confident in him getting 30 minutes. And he bombs in some threes. He can give you 25, 30 points pretty easily at 3,800. And that's value. So there's a lot of value at the top end there. You've got the artist formerly known as Taurean Prince. 4,600 has been disappointing. He's a tournament guy because he's got that 50-point upside. And maybe the absence of Huerter can help. But I'm not totally sold on him. Of course, we're not looking at Vince Carter or Bruce Brown here. For the big men, that's where the value really lies. Actually, I didn't talk about Reggie Jackson for point guards. I like him. 5,600. He's been really rock solid. Drummond and Griffin are the big names for the Pistons. Love their pricing. Love their opportunity. Love the matchup. Really strong cash and tournament guys. The big men for Atlanta, there's value in them too. The Baptist John Collins and the Undertaker Dwayne Dedman at 77 and 5,100. I think Collins is numbers a little bit too high here. Not super into him at that price. And the Undertaker at 51, I worry that we'll get some Wizard Spellman minutes. We'll get some Alex Len minutes. And they make them a little bit more risky to me. If you're going to use them, it's probably just for tournaments. But they're not super interesting players here in this matchup, unfortunately, for those guys. I'm sure they're really disappointed to hear me say that. On FanDuel, similar list of guys, Ellington, Bazemore, Bembry, Reggie Jackson, Kennard, Griffin. Prince at 51 probably comes in a little bit more valuable on FanDuel. I'd lean a bit more there. While Drummond, on the other hand, 10,900, yeah, less favorable on FanDuel and not someone who I'd be lining up to have in my roster, or on my roster is probably the correct English. The Minnesota Timberwolves and those tricky New York Knicks, the Wolves are 6-point favorites. The total is 220. The Fizdale rotation questions are there for us. Emmanuel Mudiay will be ready to play. Frank Ntilikina is out. We've got Tyus Jones, who's likely to return for Minnesota. Bob Covington is still out. While Mario Hezonja is probable, I don't think he's going to play. Now, of course, Fizdale came out and said, oh yeah, we'll probably be able to play Mudiay and Dennis Smith together. that just is going to lead to way more mess in this rotation. Dotson and Trier and whatever sort of nonsense he's going to cook up, Fizdale, it's going to be reflected in this game. And there's just hard to rely upon these guys. In saying that, there is still some real values on the board because of their pricing. Let's go to point guard first, though. Jeff Teague.
My name is Jeff.
5,900. His last three games have yielded 39 points. That's really hard to avoid. Moutier, I would avoid. I just don't know what the role is going to be. Well, Dennis Smith is probably in fade territory with Fizdale. Going to likely deck him around it and insert Moutier into that rotation. I don't think Trier is really worth it. Kadeem Allen, who'd been playing massive minutes before and really good numbers, like, is he going to cede those minutes to Moutier, or will it be Dotson, or will it be Trier? There's so many unknowns, and I don't think Allen's going to be getting the 27 a night that he was getting prior to the All-Star break, so that takes a lot of his value away. Derrick Rose at 5,700. He has cooled off, and the ankle's obviously still causing some sort of an issue for him. Okogie's at 3,900. Strong before the break. I don't really trust that at all, although the opponent's nice. And then you've got Andy Wiggins, 6,500, who's putting up okay numbers. I don't dislike Wiggins here. The matchup works in his favor, but he's not the strongest of options. Dotson also not interested. The Fort, Kevin Knox. He's been really bad, 21-point average over the last five. Now, the salary's fine, and I think he's a tournament guy because he's going to start, but he is just as likely as anybody on this team to get dicked with minutes, and that's going to limit his value on this team. And with Wiggins back, who did miss games before the break, Luol Deng was playing big, but he's likely to see his role reduced. Now, the big man is where I'm interested here. The Cornetto, Luke Cornett, 3,500. He started the last game at power forward. He's played 31 minutes in two consecutive games. That probably means he's a DMP CD here, but if we do hear that he's starting, then I do like him at that salary. Same with Mitchie Robinson, 24 minutes, 28 minutes, doesn't matter. At 4,500, I think he gets that value, and he gets it comfortably. While Townsie at 10,400, Gorgui Dieng is out. Now, Gorgui Dieng's not a guy that's taking minutes away from Towns, but what it means is they've got no other center on this roster, so maybe we have to get, instead of 35 Towns minutes, we get 37 or 38, and they push in those extra couple of minutes, which makes him a strong value at 10,400. Gibson and Šarić, maybe Dario at 48, who is putting up some strong numbers of late, I would consider him. I'm not massively into him, though. While DeAndre Jordan at 6,100, given the role split we're seeing with him, and same with Noah Vonleh, I can't in good faith think that they're good options. On Fanjul, Cornet at 45, Taj at 38. Now, that 38 for Taj, I think he's going to get a couple of extra minutes playing at center. I don't think there's really any upside in Gibson, but centers and big men against the Knicks in general can put up some okay numbers, although that's been muted with DeAndre Jordan and Mitch Robinson playing more lately. But 3,800 for Taj, I think, is an okay cash option with the drop lower score scenario. Townsie looks pretty good. Mitchie Robinson at 61, that's high on Fanjul, and that gives me an element of pause. I also think Wiggins at 7,000 is a decently stronger play over on Fanjul. Next up, you got the Clippers and the Grizzlies. The Clippers are 2-point favorites. The total 214. You got Garrett Temple against his former team. You got Avery Bradley against his former team. It's just a matchup of the mediocre shooting guards. We have Jaren Jackson Jr., who's questionable with a quad issue. Jonas Valanciunas has been ruled out due to personal issues, and Chandler Parsons is apparently back in the rotation for the rest of the season. God knows why. They must have. He must have threatened to sue them or something. He's going to be back in the rotation, so that's going to take someone like Bruno Caboclo or Julian Washburn out of the rotation, most likely. Kyle Anderson still remains out as his injury continues to be a massive pain in the ass. DeLon Wright's at 3,700. He had 29 points in 26 minutes last game. He should be getting 26-plus every night if Bickerstaff wasn't Bickerstaff, but I still think at that price, I don't think you can go past him at 3,700. That is a real good value play. Well, Avery Bradley, he's even in play here. He had 25 last game in 29 minutes, which is a more realistic output as opposed to that bullshit 52-pointer that he had two games prior, but he's still sub 4,000. I have my doubts with Bradley, but it appears they want to give him minutes, and at 3,800, I think you look at him, but still probably more as a tournament guy. Conley's at 7,600. I think that's definitely risky to consider using him, given how the Grizzlies have been handling things. Well, Louis Williams at 71, just blasting everybody at the moment, averaging 43 over the last three in sub 30 minutes. Like the matchup for Lou. Pat Beverly at 49, not really. Gildas Alexander, he's getting docked quite a bit at the moment. At shooting guard, Justin Holliday's at 45. He would just be a tournament guy at that salary. If it was cheaper, then maybe you consider him. Landry Shamet, he's going to be the starter moving forward, according to Rivers, at 4,000. He doesn't do anything apart from shoot threes, but at 4,000, much like we talked about earlier with the Duke Wayne Ellington, at 4,000, you can easily give me 28, 29, 30, 31. Oh, I'm not just going to keep counting, but you can get those numbers from someone like Shamet. So I think he's an interesting enough guy here, probably more for tournaments though. CJ Miles, if we do have Triple J out, I could see Miles starting, and he would be a very low roster percentage option in tournaments. For the small forwards, Parsons is minimum salary. He has played 3 games this season. He has not been good in them. Maybe. The answer is no, but maybe. Because that minimum salary, maybe if Jackson is out, then we get a weird Parsons game. It could be a bananas one, and I wouldn't want to use it in single entry, but you never know. Jermichael Green at 34 against his former team, I just don't see enough upside in his value. While the Rooster at 6,800, Danilo Gallinari, has last couple of games haven't been great, but still, 33 points in 25 minutes, that's value. So I like the Rooster here. He could really explode, probably more tournaments than anything. At center, Joakim Noah at 3,800. I like it for cash with those absences and a potential absence of Jackson coming up. He's been getting way too many minutes, but he's actually been productive. And centers against the Clippers has been something that you can attack pretty much all season. So Noah's in play. Ivan Rabb at 5,600. That's a big price for Rabb, but centers again against the Clippers is a good option. He should start, and he should get more than the 9 minutes he got last game with Valanciunas out. And then, of course, if Jackson's out, that does help him even further. So I think Rabb is your interesting guy, but that salary's high and probably more tournaments. Zubats is at 4,200, 28 in 22 minutes last game before the break. That's really good. Not totally sure on him at 42, but I think there is, he'd be a tournament pool guy, but he'd be down my list of guys I want to use. Triple J is only tournaments because he's a propensity to foul. Well, 6,900 for Montrezl Harrell.
Giggity!
Lowest score of 31 over the last 5 is strong. I think in a slower paced game against the Grizzlies, I can find better options out there than the old table. On FanDuel, Rabb at 38. Now, that's what I'm talking about. 3,800, I'm massively into that. It's a huge difference between FanDuel and DraftKings. Justin Holiday, the same, 39 on FanDuel with Kyle Anderson out. There's an opportunity for him to be a 40-pointer. In fact, just a few games ago, he had 40 points, and that at 3,900 is interesting. Noah's in play, Jaren Jackson in play. Dylan Wright, the flip side, he's at 5,300, and that makes me a little bit more a little bit more cautious in using Dylan here. Same with Conley at 78. 100. Zubats at 46 is okay, and Shamet at 43 would probably be just more of a tournament option in my mind. Let's go to the next one. It's the Denver Nuggets and the Dallas Mavericks. The Nuggets are 3.5-point favorites. The total is 219. Gaz Harris is back.
Nice, Gary!
We don't know what sort of minutes he's going to be getting here, as he could be fully up to speed with the All-Star break. So he is an interesting one, and that's going to throw that guard rotation into a mix, into a mess, really. Monty Morris, Malik Beasley, Isaiah Thomas, the Blue Arrow, Will Barton. Like, where are the minutes going to fall? It's going to put a lot of doubts on a lot of these guys here for Denver. For Dallas at point guard, 9,100. Luka Doncic, he's giving us 45 a night consistently. I like the cash. He's got clear upside. And then you go the Blue Arrow, 6,300, Jamal Murray. I have no faith in his floor at the moment because I don't know how these minutes are going to shake out with confidence. So I look at him as a tournament upside guy who's got massive upside in a positive matchup, but there is that worry with all those guys there. The burner, Jalen Brunson, is down at 35. He was on the bench last game, and I think that might be something that sticks. Isaiah Thomas and Monty Morris are probably hard to use. Same with Beasley, and Trey Burke's not someone we're keen on. Timmy Hardaway's at 51. I love that at 51. Even in the last couple of games, he hasn't been great, but he's been getting 26. So that's some value there for Tim. He can be better than that. He's probably more, you're going to lean more GPP with Hardaway. The matchup is a relatively neutral one for him as well. I think Harris is somewhat of a fade as he returns, and Farton, Will Barton at 54. You'd have to be pretty brave to use him considering how poorly he's played and now the minutes crunch. But 5,400, you look at him and go, well, can he be a 40-pointer? Maybe. Maybe he can be. It still wouldn't be the guy that I would be relying on. Dorian Finney-Smith's at 39. We know he's going to play. We know he's going to get minutes. But is he going to produce? Well, he's not a high producer usually. But if he gets 25, that's not bad at 3,900. That's over 6x value. And the matchup is positive. Yeah, he's a tournament guy, I believe. And then other big men we want to look at, Dwighty Powell at 42, no faith in him. Paulie Millsap, I love that at 4,600 for Paul Millsap. That is a great price, and I think he is almost a cash lock on this slate. Well, Nikola Jokic, 10,100 also. He's just giving 50 without really even thinking about it. So I like Jokic here. Maxi Kleber, yeah. Mason Plumlee, Salah Mejri, who started the last game. I don't think we need to look at them too closely. On FanDuel, Gaz Harris at 53, if you're brave, but I'm not that brave. Blue Arrow, again, more of a tournament guy. Jokic and Doncic at 11 and 10 have decent value. I'd probably look at Jokic more than Doncic in this matchup. That's just probably a bit high for Luka. While Barton at 55 is a more appealing option on FanDuel than what he is over on DraftKings. It should go without saying that I don't think Dirk Nowitzki is an option on either site. The next game is the last game. It's the Utah Jazz and the Oklahoma City Thunder. We're in Oklahoma City. The Thunder are 3.5-point favorites and the total 226. Obviously a huge matchup between division rivals. Markieff Morris is questionable after recently signing a contract with this team, while Jeremy Grant and Dennis Schroeder, who both missed before the break, are likely to return. Morris will likely come in and take maybe a minute or two off Grant, take all of Patrick Patterson's minutes, and maybe he takes some of Nerlens Noel. But remember, he has been out for a long time after neck surgery. So at point guard, Schroeder's at 4,700. He's had a really good record against Utah, averaging 38 in the last three, most of that with Atlanta. Not massively into him. Same with Ravishing Rick. Donovan Mitchell.
He's Don. He's good.
Yeah, 8,300 for the Don. I think he's a tournament guy, but that's really about it. Jingle and Joe's at 5,000. I'm not interested in him there. Terry Ferguson, Kyle Korver, the same. At small forward, Royce O'Neal's been getting a big chunk of minutes. He hasn't been producing at a huge level, but he's maybe a weird option you look at. In general, probably not. While Paul George has been killing it, averaging 63 over his last five, he's at 10,800. You feel really good about his floor, and he's an affordable option, even though it is a high price. I didn't talk Russell Westbrook. I should have. 11,500. He's also putting up some massive numbers. I like both him and George here. Jay Crowder, not for me. Big man, Steve Adams, 6,200, has really, really declined since that ankle injury, averaging just 21 over the last five. It is a positive matchup for Adams. He's averaged 31 the last three times against Gobert. I'd like that salary to come down to 5,500, though. So for now, I'll fade him. Favors is not really in play. While Gobert at 8,000, probably a little bit too high against someone like Adams, who is relatively good at reducing the output of opposition centers. Now, Adams at 6,700 on FanDuel, the same. I'm not massively into it. I like Westbrook at 11,800 quite a bit. Paul George at 11,800. There's value in those as your high ticket guys. I like the Don at 8,500. That's a better play on FanDuel than what it is over on DraftKings also. And that'll wrap it up. For looking at all of those games, let's just flip in and look at some studs and values. On DraftKings, I like Towns as my stud player, and my value guy is Bembry. On FanDuel, my stud is also Towns. Knicks matchup plus Gorgui Dieng sidelined, and my value is Ivan Rabb. On Yahoo, my stud is Towns, and my value is Kent Bazemore. And on DraftStars, let's go with Nikola Vucevic as my stud, and my value play is... they're the wrong ones. I apologize for that on DraftStars, because they are not the correct place. So let me, I probably should... Let's go dig those out. Let's do the right thing. All right, so on DraftKings, the stud is Karl-Anthony Towns, and the value play over there is Ivan Rabb. That'll wrap it up. We are back after back from the All-Star break. I hope you guys all had a nice break and survived without NBA basketball. We've got less than two months to go to the end of the regular season. Make sure you are supporting this podcast by subscribing, Apple Podcasts, and leaving a review. 5 stars is the best way you can help this show out. So thank you to everybody who has done that. Follow me on Twitter at @RedRock_Beeble and follow the Locked On Podcast Network at @LockedOnNBAnet as well. Guys, we are done here. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.